me we can fly. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit
style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style. Biscuit
style. Biscuit style. Biscuit style.
Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Feckin' Biscuit podcast. My name is Eric and with me is my co-host, Fergal.
Hey Eric, it's great to be here, back talking about Limp Bizkit again, and yeah. I've been waiting for this song for a long time. This is a real highlight of the discography for me, so yeah, let's get moving on this one. So much to talk about.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, this is a big one. This is one of their... We have our list that we go through each episode. If we're going to put it on the list or not, I think pretty much we know what's happening with this one. This one, I recall, came out in the June of 1999. I don't know if when you first heard it. I heard it on MTV when I was visiting my grandma in Florida.
Yeah, so this was like the first Limp Bizkit album came out, and I wasn't a fan at the time. That was 97. But by the time this album came out, I was a big fan. So this was kind of a first day buyer type of situation for me. Mm-hmm. I was 13 at the time, really getting into rock music and all obviously like new metal. I was into Korn quite heavily at the time. And I kind of remember people were saying, I kind of first started about Limp Bizkit and people were calling them a Korn ripoff. And I think this album really was their statement about not being a Korn ripoff. And this song in particular really differentiated the two bands from one another. But we'll get into all of that. But yeah, this for me was a huge album upon release. I bought the CD in Music City, a shop that's no longer there in a town near where I live in Dunleary. And there was actually a queue of people queuing up to buy the album before the doors of the shop opened. There was like 20 or 30 people there, something you just don't see anymore these days. But it was such a monumental release at the time, and historically now in the grand kind of pantheon of new metal, this is one that stands up as a classic, as we all know. I mean, we've discussed other songs from this album, but as I said, I was waiting to get to this particular song, Nookie, because it's a real standout for me.
As I recall, they sort of, when this came out in the like I said, early summer 99, then they completely, this sort of when they really blew up. And then that entire summer moving forward, I think everything just went completely nuts. That's the same summer of the infamous Woodstock 99 show. And they were obviously, I mean, I think most people have seen the documentary.
I have, yeah.
Point, yeah. And so they were obviously sort of right in the center of that. And also, you know, a bit of controversy. Some people sort of claim that they sort of incited sort of a riot there for that during their performance.
I mean, I think they were misrepresented in some of the media and even the documentary itself for how they actually behaved on stage. I think a lot of the facts were left out of that story. I mean, I'll always be an advocate for Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst. Mm-hmm. They're my favorite band. They have been since 98. And you know, I don't like when people talk shit about them, and it kind of really annoys me when people paint a particular type of narrative about the band, or particularly about Fred Durst and his behavior. And I feel like he's often misrepresented, he's often misquoted in interviews, and it's like people try to stir up stuff because he's an easy target. He's, you know, he can be a figure of fun to people who don't take the music of Limp Bizkit seriously, and that's their loss. But like Fred Durst is an easy target, I think, and Limp Bizkit themselves have become kind of a punchline to some people over the years, which I think is completely like unjustified. It's, you know, I don't think people have spent the time really listening to Limp Bizkit's music. I don't think culturally or historically they appreciate the impact this band had on popular music and heavy metal today. So things like the, you know, they incited the riot and stuff. It's like, if you read a little deeper, like I get my news from reliable sources. And, you know, if you read a little deeper, if you do some research, you'll find that Limp Bizkit actually did not incite a riot at Woodstock 99.
No, I think that definitely there was bigger problems at that festival that had nothing to do with them. In that documentary, the people running the festival do not come off well in that, and I think that probably worse than any of the bands, even, because, you know, they, and also you get the, since that incident, you know, they've, Fred Durst and I think maybe one of the other members, Wes Borland, they've come out and sort of said that, you know, they kind of regret how that thing went down, whereas you had the people who ran the festival who never admitted to be at fault in any way whatsoever, that they think they did an amazing job all the way through.
they accepted no culpability whatsoever. And the arrogance from them, you know, the arrogance from all of them on the documentary was astounding. And yeah. I was actually so surprised that they allowed themselves to be filmed in, like, saying such arrogant things and, like, lacking any culpability, and they allowed it to be released. Because when I was watching it, you know, they were the figures of fun, not Limp Bizkit, not Fred Durst. It was the festival organizers who were just completely out of their depth and who made a balls of it, to be frank.
I think it's also because I remember when I was watching this, I was 15 when this happened, and this is I'd also during that summer picked up the album, and like a lot of people, they're broadcasting MTV, and I really would want, I was like kind of jealous, I wanted to be there. But during the coverage of that, you know, none of the mayhem was sort of shown in the coverage. It was just they sort of saw a little bit of it, but it was they just kind of, I had no idea what a train wreck it was. Until, yeah, like now
we didn't get that over here until much later. I think it was a few months after the airing of the festival, I remember, and it aired really late at night, which was really frustrating. But I set my VCR. This is how far back this is to record. And they only showed a few highlights, just a few songs. But yeah, like that was obviously huge at the time. The negative publicity kind of, I don't know, like it spoiled it a little. But at the same time, Limp Bizkit were on fire. Everybody knew they stole the show at Woodstock, regardless of the stories that came out afterwards. That it didn't really matter. I mean, I think they could leave with their heads held high as the best performing band at that festival.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I think that anyone, also if you see, there's plenty of footage that you can definitely see that as well. So let's, we have a lot to talk about this song, and there's so much talk about that, the fact that through the episode, I'll be splicing in, we have some guests who have been on the pod before, who've sort of recorded messages and their feelings about the song, so I'll sprinkle those in throughout the episode.
Brilliant.
Yes. All right, so let's see how to do this. Should we go through the lyrics first and then do some music, or how do you want
to? Well, I have some notes here with timestamps, right, if you want, and you can play different sections of the song if you want to go that way.
Yeah, I'll pull the song up here. Now the funny thing is, because if you look at when you're trying to, because I've seen the video many a time, I think most people who have, but there's rumors of an uncensored version, and that's not, there is no uncensored. There's a certain extent there is, but when we get to a certain bit in the chorus, which we'll get to, I think some people assume there's a version that we're not,
which,
yeah, but there's certain, yeah, but that doesn't really necessarily.
I mean, that's the holy grail of Limp Bizkit, isn't it? It's like the songs that you never get to hear, that you hear about whispers of, you know, the uncensored version of Nookie. And like, it's one of these things I reckon is in the vaults, but I don't think it's ever leaked as far as I am aware.
No.
But yeah, this is the holy grail of Limp Bizkit fans, the uncensored version of Nookie, where he says that word that we all seem to be, well, I won't say, but you can draw your own conclusions to what the word might be.
All right. So let's just go. I'll just start playing and we'll make stops along the way.
Sure. Play it up to about 45 seconds, I'd say. Right, I mean, like, you've got some nice bass there, and you've got a great guitar, but this song belongs to Fred Durst, and we'll see that now in a few minutes.
So I'll stop it here for a second.
Yeah.
So that's what we have the main riff, really heavy stuff. Wes Borland, definitely underrated guitarist.
Absolutely.
There's also as a guitarist myself, I mean, there's bits here that time signature wise that are a bit trickier than you would think, and I really like the riff.
Yeah, I mean, I love the riff. I love how it opens. But then, you know, Fred Durst comes in about the 30-second mark and he says, I came into this world as a reject. Now, I mean, to me, this is the real start of Fred Durst's more poetic type of lyrics. Mm-hmm. You know, immediately we can empathize with Fred's situation or the character in the song situation. As heavy metal fans, we're pretty much born outsiders, you know, who hasn't felt like a reject at times.
Well, definitely, but, yeah.
like in the late 1990s, there was nobody really there to represent the disenfranchised, the disillusioned, the disrespected, until Fred and Limp Bizkit came along. Like, Fred basically became the voice of the voiceless.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I think that that's, I think that is very much the, I've yet to meet a metal fan who has not had sort of the feelings of being an outsider and being a bit of a reject, and being, especially in this era where, I mean, before the, these guys, I feel that metal was, during this era, quite uncool. I know in my school, initially I was not seen as particularly, I was not particularly popular initially. And a lot of it was me showing up, you know, metal t-shirts.
Yeah.
And then, so then there's a switch somewhere, sort of summer 99, when this kind of, you know, when this happened.
Exactly. I mean, and like at the time you had all these dinosaur bands that were still around, like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. And I think Iron Maiden even got back together with Bruce Dickinson around this time or
yeah,
something.
I think they
but
did.
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but like, I mean, these bands were past it, and everybody knows that they were. Like, nobody really cared about that, you know? Everybody cared about what was new, what was fresh, and that was the likes of Korn and Limp Bizkit, and later on, you know, Stained and classic acts like that. And to compare that to what was around at the time, it's just so fresh and so different and so brave, and I'll get to that later when we look deeper into the lyrics.
All right, well, let's keep going a little bit here. We just sort of gotten into where the, we're just the first bit of the first verse here, so let's keep going.
Maybe pause it there for a second.
Yeah, let's go.
So like, so he's like, now she's stuck with my homies that she fucked, and I'm just a sucker with a lump in my throat. So, I mean, look, it must have taken enormous courage for Fred Durst to open up like this. You know, in a world of posing and posturing, Fred's out here in 1999, long before this was an acceptable thing to do. He's talking about heartbreak. He's talking about anxiety, possibly depression.
Yeah.
This is the era of toxic masculinity, right bang in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fred Durst has the courage to stand out against all of that and really blaze a trail, I think, a trail of men being comfortable to open up and to discuss their feelings. And then he refers to himself as a chump 6 times in a row. You know, this man is, he's downtrodden. He's like, he's on his last fucking legs here. This woman has broken his heart. And then later he's like, I'm like a sucker, like I said, fucked up in the head, not, right?
Yeah.
He throws in the not at the end, because it's almost as if, like, when he's, while he's blazing this trail against toxic masculinity, Fred isn't even quite fully there yet, you know, so he has to save face just a little bit. You know, we all have to start somewhere, so every cultural movement or every cultural shift has to start somewhere, and I think Fred Durst has done an admirable job, a thankless job too, no doubt.
Definitely. And also, I mean, there's I mean, this is, I've yet to hear any sort of deep analysis of the lyrics or deep dive in the way that we were doing right now, and that particular message I've not heard lifted very much. But obviously that was you know, that could definitely it was not cool sharing your feelings in that era in that way, not at all.
Yeah, and then if you play a bit more here,
yeah,
we learn even more about the man.
Right, let's stop there first before we get to the chorus here.
So like, yeah, I mean, maybe she just made a mistake. I should give her a break. My heart will ache either way. Again, it's a powerful snapshot of a brokenhearted man. He's almost forgiving her. And like
yeah.
we know that this woman cheated on him with his friends, or at least one of his friends. And he's during his kind of soul bearing, you know, I suppose, moment here, he's also taking the time to almost forgive the woman who made him feel like this and who drove him to this. And I think that's just so impressive for somebody like back in that era. It's even today we're only kind of at the start, at the cusp of, you know, men being able to talk about these type of issues. And Fred Durst was way ahead of his time.
Hello there, it's Dan Mortimer. I've been on the show a few times talking about Iron Maiden, so I imagine quite a few of you have heard me already. But I'm not here to talk about Maiden today. I'm here to talk about one of my favourites, Limp Bizkit. And the song we are going to be talking about is Nookie, which is a very big hit of theirs, played live at every gig, I should imagine. I've not had the pleasure of seeing it live, but I really hope to one day. Yeah, what can I say about Nookie? Well, one word, banger. Where do I start? I love the opening. There's a heavy riff. Yeah, heavy, funky riff, which sort of reminded me of the Dave Navarro era of Chili Peppers, but much better, obviously. The opening lyric is, "I came into this world as a reject." I can relate to that. I've often felt like an outsider in my life, and I would say that I do get imposter syndrome a lot of the time. So I think Fred Durst really hit the nail on the head with that one. There's another lyric which says, "Dwelling on the past, burning up my brain," which again, I can relate to that, and I'm sure many, many people can. There was another one which stood out to me, which I can't so relate to, but it would certainly piss me off. And that lyric is, "My girlie ran away with my pay. Now she's stuck with my homies that she fucked." Yeah, I can't relate to that, but I can understand why one would get upset about that. I think it's a really, really great song. And you know, there's a part later on in the song where he says, "Just leave me alone," which, I think it's very relatable. I keep saying that word, but I really think it is. I really believe in that. And although Fred Durst is no Bob Dylan or Leonard Cohen in terms of lyrical prowess, I don't think you should knock him, because I think he spoke to the youth of America at the time, and indeed continues to do so. I was a bit too young to enjoy Limp Bizkit in their heyday, but I do think they're timeless, and if I'm honest, I probably prefer them to Iron Maiden. There we go.
Definitely. And also, it's interesting here, because you have, like, so you have the bit here where he's very open about this, and then you get to the chorus, which is, I feel like perhaps where the sort of, to a certain extent, closing himself up again and sort of dismissing the whole thing in a very typical kind of, as one often, you know, one is sort of assumed one is supposed to do, or at least, you know, that's sort of the, which would probably come more naturally and people would expect of someone. And,
exactly.
And you have the two bits sort of become a very interesting whole.
Mm.
All right, let's do the chorus here.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, well.
So like Fred, like, he claims to have done it all for the Nookie, but we know this not to be the case. The man is heartbroken. He's distraught. He's been wronged. He's already shown us his hand. He's shown us his true face with the earlier lyrics that we just kind of analyzed there. And it's kind of brazen claim that he stayed with this woman who wronged him. He broke his heart by cheating on him, that he stayed with her for the Nookie or sex. We know this not to be true. Like, Fred knows we know, and we know he knows we know. This chorus is a nod and a wink to the very type of masculine culture that he's railing against. It's a nod and a wink to the listener who already knows where Fred's heart and his head are at. Fred, I think here is subverting traditional masculine expectations with this kind of disingenuous chorus.
That's very interesting. That's definitely where I've not really looked at it, but that's very interesting. I think that, with the verses, with the it does sort of paint that picture, and that's very interesting. I imagine, well, it's interesting. So if any of the listeners at home sort of I'd be interested to see how they interpret those two different
very what I think here bits. What we're getting is honesty in the verses and kind of subversion in the chorus, and that's the whole package we're getting here. And it's really a beautifully crafted song in that way, in that to the untuned ear, you could just think Fred Durst as being this horribly toxic, you know, typically masculine, 1990s, you know, brash idiot. But if you pay slightly more attention, you know, and you get into the nuance of the song, then you really get a clearer picture of where this man, his head and his heart are at.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, we have some more. Let's keep going. We got quite a bit to get through here. There's a lot happening. So let's continue here. Why did it take so long? Why did I wait so long, huh? To figure All right, let's or should I keep going? There's I think we get to a point here where that is more of a natural break here. Let's
sure. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So
I mean, yeah. I mean, what can you say here? Like, like this is Fred again. It's like at its most honest and raw. Like this underpins my points earlier about the chorus. That's not to be taken at face value. We can tell by the earnestness of these lyrics that Fred has been deeply hurt by the actions of his girlfriend. I mean, the real Fred is the one whose tender heart was put in a blender, as he eloquently puts it.
Yeah. And it's he's really wearing his heart on his sleeve on these bits here. And yeah, it's definitely not the norm for this kind of this genre at this time, and especially if we look at his sort of people, other people of that came out around the same time music wise. You had like Kid Rock was sort of a contemporary to this. His
absolutely. I'm glad you brought up Kid Rock because he represents the other. If Kid Rock had this chorus, we take it at face value, because that's the only level that he goes to. You know, he doesn't operate on any other level. It's just a macho kind of, you know, I don't know. Beer drinking, hell raising, whatever the hell you want to call Kid Rock. But obviously Fred is like an onion. You know, he's got so many layers.
Yeah, is definitely an onion more so, where Kid Rock is quite, you know, you know what you're getting, and that you're getting exactly what you think you're getting. And
I mean, Kid Rock is probably more like a pear, I'd say.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. They're very good. And you know, he's still, I mean, they're, you know, all these, you know, both of them are still active to this day, whereas I think that he's lost quite a bit of respect, even more exactly. So. And whereas Limp Bizkit are still out there doing it. So
I mean, and like, here's another analogy. If you look at the you know, the shelf life of pears and onions, you know, an onion will last for a very, very long time before it goes off. Whereas like, if you have a pear sitting in a fruit bowl, it just rots, you know. One day it seems like it's edible, the next day it's mush. And I think that's kind of an allegory for Kid Rock's career, where Fred Durst is this steadfast onion. You know, it sits there. It could be sitting in your kind of vegetable pantry for months, and it wouldn't rot at all. Whereas like the pear is long gone, you know?
Yeah, or like you have the onion there for a while. The onion, you know, basically for all intents and purposes lasts forever. And the pear, you have that in there for a while, and you think you know where you have the pear. Then suddenly you go to get the pear, and the pear has become very racist and is posting horrible stuff on Twitter.
Hello, this is Greg from the Transatlantic State of the Art Speed Metal Podcast. So far, so pod, so what? And naturally, when I was invited to talk about the classic 1999 album from Limp Bizkit called Significant Other, not only did I jump at the chance, but I basically backflipped, cartwheeled, and moonsaulted at the chance. So it's just, it's one of those pivotal records. When you look at the lexicon of American, not just metal, but just music in its entirety, it's an important patchwork in the fabric of the musical landscape, not only of the 90s, but going forward as well, too. You know, 1999 was a pivotal year for music, and arguably the apex of all that was great in music as well. So Limp Bizkit, you know, they were the heroes that we needed, you know, at that time in American music. You know, there was just a huge step up in quality from the debut $3 Bill Y'all to Significant Other as well, too. So let's not overstate that. Showed real growth in songs like Rearrange and 1999. And but really, you know, it's been said countless times, and you know, but it will always bear repeating, really the legacy of Limp Bizkit will always come down to Nookie. That's, you know, I know I don't try not to be the guy who, you know, waxes poetically on the hits, but really when you nail it, I guess it really doesn't matter, you know, how many people like it. Right is right, and if more people like it, then so be it. So I'm very, very happy to have had a little piece of this podcast to talk about just a classic album, but more importantly than that, just a classic and classy band. Thanks, lads.
So that, just for I'm assuming people are aware, but there was yeah, there's Kid Rock has very much gone the he made some odd life choices as of late. So that's all that we're not here to talk about him. Let's continue on
Yeah.
with the song here. And I think we're getting up to the second chorus, but let's I'll go start here and we'll go till the end of the second chorus.
Great.
All right, so that's the we're getting to the one of my favorite bits of the song, but what's to be said here about the this chorus is fairly similar to the first one. There's no real
Yeah, I
changes.
mean, look, we know what you're up to, Fred, now, look, we know that you didn't do it all for the nookie. You love this woman and she broke your heart and you still stayed with her for a period of time afterwards. And we've delved into the reasons why he's juxtaposed this kind of chorus verse structure throughout the song, and it's just a really kind of poetic way of, framing this issue with masculinity in the late 1990s, especially among, famous white males. Let's be honest. Like, they're always supposed to appear invincible, invulnerable, and never let their guard down. But obviously, we know here that Fred has.
Indeed, he has. It's also, I'd like to, it'd be interesting to see, I don't think he's ever gone on record who this song is about, really, but it'd be interesting to get their reaction to that. But which back, I mean, this is, I mean, you know, this as far as I know, there's never been any indication of who this might be about. But you know,
Well, I mean, I know you're in touch with Fred Durst, so maybe you could ask him and just see. Maybe we could get this person on the podcast. Let's see. Let's
let's
see.
see. Yeah, we'll never hurts to ask.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, who said that? That's I think it was Michael Scott, right?
I think so.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right. So let's get to the we have a middle section here. Where there's a lot happening, so let's just dive into it. Right, let's just take it in little chunks here. So what do we have here lyric wise?
So he's saying, I'm only human. It's so easy for your friends to give you their advice. I think that's as far as we got there. But yeah, we know where he's going with this.
Yeah, so let's keep rolling here. All right, so let's just before we get to the last bit here, I think this is very extremely relatable stuff because obviously, he's referring to presumably as a friend who or friends perhaps in plural who have said, you know, you should just get out of the situation. But you know, it's always so much easier to, you know, give advice than to receive advice and listen to that advice.
Course. I mean, look, he's getting unsolicited advice. They're giving unsolicited advice to a heartbroken man. The fact that he has the decency to say that he appreciates his friends in those lyrics there, even when they're providing him with this essentially useless advice, it demonstrates the strength of character of the man. It, like earlier on, where he's almost forgiving the person who's wronged him, here he's kind of telling his friends to leave him alone, but also saying, I appreciate you. And I mean, just God almighty, this man, he's not appreciated in his own time, I don't think. He
No.
will be, I'm sure, when he passes.
Well, also,
God forbid.
we're doing a lot here just to get people to be aware of some of this. And you know, I know there's many Limp Bizkit deep dive podcasts, but I feel also that I think I'd argue that we're perhaps on the higher tier of the Limp, you know, in the many Limp Bizkit podcasts that are out there. I think we're among the better ones, and I think we Because we do do stuff like this. We go in real deep to lyrics that some of them don't do.
Exactly, yeah. Biscuit Bass, I mean, comes to mind. They really, I don't know if they appreciate the layers of Fred, like we said.
No.
I wouldn't assume that they realize that Fred is an onion.
No, I don't think Talking Biscuit has had a no, but I think there's a lot of them out there that don't really, get in deep like this. And that's that, that's fine. Not everyone has the are as passionate
Yeah, I
about it as we
mean,
are.
I think And Biscuits for All does a good job as well. I'd say we'd be on a par with them, but I mean, it's us too. I'd say they're really taking a proper look
Yeah.
at these songs.
No, I thought the Biscuit A to Z was very good. Jonathan is a huge Limp Bizkit. I think he might actually be writing a message. He might be one of the people sending in an audio message, for this episode. So hopefully we'll get that from him. I know he's been very busy.
It'll be nice to hear from him actually, because I do appreciate some of their takes, all right. But I think they kind of jumped the shark around episode 196, thereabouts up towards 200, But anyway, in the early days, anyway, they were pretty good.
Oh yeah, very, very good, very good. And like I said, it's always fun. It's a huge community out there, and it's very it's I'm glad that we're it was very fun to be part of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I've made so many friends now since we started this Limp Bizkit podcast. I can't even count on two hands the number. It's more than that. It's 11 at least.
Oh man, there you go.
Who wants some?
Now this is a force to be reckoned with.
I'm an equal opportunity ass kicker.
I ought to break a broom handle off in your ass.
Damn, I'm good.
Son of a bitch. What a pussy.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
You invincible headshot scripted cheater.
Damn, I hate disco.
Hello everybody, what is up? This is Johnny V.I.H. from Bizkit to Z. I'm in between reps here at the gym, and I felt it's time for some good old philosophy. Well, what is this if not existential? My so-called girl, but in reality, her agenda. She put my tender heart in a blender, and I still surrender. Huh, like a chump. This is life. You got to make the most of it. I feel the pump. So back to Eric and the boys, and well, didn't we all do it all for the Nuki Indiana?
Indiana,
we all do it
all for the Nuki Indiana.
So let's finish this up bit up here. So it's been sort of music wise, it's been kind of things got a little bit quiet here. It's a little more chill out for a bit, and then in a second things are going to really explode again. And I think we're right at that point where it builds up to the final chorus. So let's hit it. So we got into the last, we're in the final chorus here. Maybe I'll just play it through because there's no, well, so we get to the end of that bit because it's,
yeah, okay.
there's yeah. Oops.
Thank you.
There we go. That's basically it.
Yeah, masterpiece. I mean, just to focus on some of those final lyrics there. He's like, ain't nothing going to change. You can go away. I'm just going to stay here and always be the same. Now, Fred claims that he's never going to change, right? But we know this not to be the case. He's growing in front of our eyes, spiritually, mentally. This is another example of his vulnerability. You know, how vulnerable he feels being so open and honest, discussing it with such raw emotion that he almost has to claw something back. He has to claw a little piece of himself back so as not to leave himself so exposed. And it's that juxtaposition of him lowering his guard while also building a wall. It's just beautiful.
It is. And it's, I think that it's, that whole bit there is that is my favorite bit of the, I think there's some really cool backing vocals. There's a lot going on guitar wise and bass wise. I think that a lot of times we've talked a lot about the lyrics here but I think that it should be some bit of a shout out to the, to guitarist Wes Borland and Sam Rivers on bass and John Otto on drums, because those guys are doing a hell of a job as well. And of course, you also have I think a lot. This is probably fairly for younger audiences. This might seem a bit odd, but this was during this era. A lot of bands would have a DJ who would do like scratch stuff and like. And this band has, of course, a gentleman by the name of a stage name DJ Lethal, who I think his real name is Lior Dimant. Is his name? He's apparently Russian. Hell of a DJ. I think that. I don't know if they started that track. I think they did, because I think Slipknot did that after them. But because there's a lot of bands, you know, a lot of new metal bands had their DJ guy. But I think he's in my mind definitely the best of that lot.
Yeah, I mean, like they're groundbreaking in so many ways, and like just having the decks on stages is one thing. You know, these types of lyrics, their approach to songwriting, you know, breaking from the mold, breaking out. I think just in summary, I think like. I know you mentioned the band there and they do a great job, but like I think this song belongs to Fred for me. Like he's opening up his heart and his soul. But simultaneously he's subverting traditional or expected male values. Like there's some great guitar riffing, but this song belongs to Fred and his bravery to stand out in the crowd, to take a stand for males everywhere, for too long have kept quiet, have stewed in their own thoughts and insecurities. This is a truly beautiful and brave statement from Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst.
I could not agree more, and I imagine that a lot of our listeners are going to feel the same way. All right, do you have anything more there? You have quite a comprehensive list. You went all in on this one, and you're probably more we could do. There's a lot to unpack, but how are you doing on your notes there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's pretty much everything I have to say about the song. I'd be really interested to hear the feedback we get from listeners and have their takes on it. And it'd be quite interesting to get a spectrum of takes, I suppose, you know, because we know a lot of our listeners listen to the likes of Talking Biscuit, you know, and Biscuits for All, all of the great podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah.
And they all have their own stances. So we have this shared community. We have this passionate community. We all come together under the biscuit, and it's just a great place to be, you know, in my life. And I just can't wait to hear from all our dedicated listeners and see what they have to think, because I think we've probably said enough.
Oh yeah, I think we had too. And this is obviously clearly going to go on the big list.
I mean, there's no question.
Oh yeah, this is definitely one of those. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. It's been a pleasure, and as always, we've done it our way,
and it's our way or the highway.
Jesus Christ. So the fuck. Oh, I think we're doing very well, actually.
Yeah, so do I.